Hey everybody, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Alex.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Chris.
Alright, so apologies for last week. As you may have noticed, there was no new episode. The short and sweet of it is we had an issue with the tablet that we usually record on. Halfway through the recording, it just turned off and refused to turn back on. So may it rest in peace. Other than that, though, we've got a pretty good show for you today. News has been kind of... What? I don't know how to phrase it. It's just there hasn't been a lot going on. It's mostly new standard. Everybody's looking at these tournaments to see what the new standard's going to look like. And without the Pro Tour happening, we haven't had anything big and modern yet. So kind of a slow time for news. So I figure we'll just start. We'll talk about some of the new standard. You guys been able to watch any of the coverage?
I've watched a little bit, and I've picked up on the Rally the Ancestors deck. And that deck's picked up in a lot of steam because of the inclusion of Reflector Mage.
How much longer is Rally in Standard? That's just until this next rotation, right?
Yep. And
it's in Fate. It rotates out.
This deck is a prime example of this deck only gets better with the more cards there are in the Standard. There are quite a few decks that pull that, but this one happens to be the winner of that category.
So what are the big inclusions from the new set that it got?
Reflector Mage. That is the big hit here. With Reflector Mage added, they kind of switched out of the whole CDC-Liliana combo. And they're going into this whole, all right, I'm going to play this card, and you're not going to be able to do anything. I'm going to outvalue you at a slower pace, but you're going to have a hard time casting spells.
Well, also it helped, too, because like the card to hose the rally was Anafinza and Cletus, which are both creatures. So they could just, you know, Coco into this, bounce it, the Anafinza, and then they can just rally off and do their husk combo thing.
Yeah, nice. I mean, both seems to... It works well with the sort of tempo game plan that I was playing. I mean, it's nice to see a card slot right into that deck. How was Rally doing before this new set? Because, I mean, it was just kind of popping in and out of Standard, right?
Reed Duke ran it and got... I can't remember if he got first or second at Grand Prix right before the set came out.
That's what I was trying to remember, because it was getting good results, but it also wasn't like you're definitely going to face it level deck
the
yet.
The biggest problem the deck had was people who weren't experienced, a lot of times they were getting draws with it from going to time.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was the thing that hurt it. You have to know what you're playing and be able to play it at a good pace, because there are lots of lines of play within the deck.
Exactly. It had a really high skill level to it. And you just couldn't pick it up and just say, hey, I'm going to play this at a tournament next weekend without being punished for it. You had to know what you were doing.
Yeah, that
there's a lot involved with the fetches, too, because it's a four-color deck, but you have to have white.
Right.
And then white's your splash, so like that got pretty tricky, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess we probably won't see do you expect to see more and more copies of this deck floating around?
It's the deck to beat in Standard right now.
Okay, nice, yeah. No, that's what's up.
When I've been seeing it on camera, it usually does well, like it even against like the control matchups, but all they're doing is they're bait and hooking, you know, all right, I'm gonna put this out there, they're gonna have to counter this, and now the shields are down so I can do what I want, and it's usually broken because when all those cards start coming out, you start bouncing permanents, drawing cards off the visionaries, it just gets out of hand really quick, because once they get those creatures on, now the engine's pumping, and it's hard to slow it down. I like the deck.
It's the best
I just
value
don't think
deck.
I don't think I could play it to time, so I couldn't just pick it up and play it.
Yeah, I mean, so that was Jerry's big thing. What have you guys been seeing in Standard? Any other observations so far?
Sylvan Advocate has also been doing pretty good. There's actually been... comparisons to it to Tarmogoyf in Standard.
Oh, wow. Because
when Tarmogoyf was in Standard, there wasn't fetches or anything like that. So when you played it on turn two, it was a 2/3 sometimes, and it at most maxed out of 4/5, which is exactly what Sylvan Advocate does. But this has the bonus of Vigilance.
Nice, yeah. What is the CMC on Sylvan Advocate?
It's one to green.
Yeah, colorless.
For a 2/3 Vigilance. And then if you have 6 lands in play, it gets +2/+2, making it a 4/5, and also it gives your lands at that point +2/+2.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, I would say it interacts even better in Standard than Tarmogoyf ever would, just because of the different, I mean, you're not going to be able to pump Tarmogoyf that often in Standard, especially depending on what's being played, whereas like 6 lands is not very far-fetched at all in Standard, so I'm sure he's going to be pumped cool most of the time, you know? No, but that's awesome. I mean, decks, like, anytime you have a creature in Standard that's good early and then just gets better in the late game, that's always awesome.
Yeah, they've been using it in like a Bant and Tamershells, like allowing those to exist because you can cocoa for it.
Right, yeah.
And then on top of it, they run Lumbering Falls, making Lumbering Falls a 5-5 hex proof is pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's sweet value.
Yeah, and then I saw one Abzan deck that was running with Soren, which is just awesome in my book. Making it a 5-5 Vigilant Lifelinker, like, yeah.
Yeah, buddy. No, it's good to see Soren picking up some play again, too, because I've always liked that Planeswalker, and he seems like he's been bouncing in and out of Standard ever since he's been printed.
Well, like, he's really good, but, like, he's better when you're ahead already. Like, right, you already have creatures in play to keep ticking up. And then on top of it, like, the 4-drop slot has been so tight in Standard lately. Like, the 4 slot has been where, you know, your deck is based around, like, Seed Rhino and Gideon and Soren and things like that. So it's hard to just jam them all.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, like you said, you need cards that come down and make an impact that can swing the board in your favor pretty much immediately, whereas, yeah, Soren, like, he's a good finisher, he's a decent top end, but yeah, for that mid-range threat, he's not the best, that's for sure. Takes him a little while to get going, so yeah, if you're behind, he's not really going to get you caught up that quickly at all. So, going down this list of some of these, Chris, which one were you looking at? You were talking about the black-white control deck?
On my initial reviews, I really liked the blue-red prowess, but then yesterday I was watching Jeff Hoogland play this black-white control deck on camera, and I really like it.
Now, this is one that existed before the new set, but it's just gotten a little bit of new. It was just the one new card, right? What is the new card it's running?
Grasp of Darkness.
And that's the reprint that's like... What is the text on that?
It's the reprint from...
It's black, target creature gets -4/-4.
Yeah, so it's slightly better Bioblight. Well, yes. I guess it doesn't have the other flaws.
Reprint
yeah.
from Ravnica City of Guilds back in 2007.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, I mean, that's a sweet... I mean, that hits a lot of cards in the format right now, so that's definitely a good card for a black-white deck to run. I mean, what is the other removal right now at 2-drop? Because the 2-drop removal is not great right now. But I mean that's
it's
a
still
solid
like
card,
Ultimate
but...
Price and Silk Wrap are there too.
Okay.
So, which are also in black-white.
I was going to say, what's the count on those cards? What is it running like?
It dropped the Silk Wrap for Grasp.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Made. I mean, Silk Wrap, you got a little bit of liability on it. It's got to hang around on the battlefield. It could get destroyed. I mean,
yeah, there's enough Dromoka's commands running around that it can get, you know, bad.
And
yeah.
Hangerback has lost it in a little bit of favor as of recent. So, you know, the Silk Wraps will go up when the Silk Wrap, I mean, when the Hangerbacks come back and vice versa.
Makes sense, yeah.
There's a little bit of uptick now with Nissa. Some of the green decks are running Hangerback and Nissa because you get to put counters on it, or put counters on the tokens and things like that. But
that's one that I was actually going to ask about. Have we seen a lot of play for the Nissa, for the new Nissa yet?
I saw it on camera a couple times, but not like anything
not
crazy.
Not the impact I was hoping she would make.
Yeah.
It's just a weird spot for it because, like, yeah, it's a 3-drop Planeswalker, which is usually really good. But at the same time, that's coming down. Things like Hordling Outburst are happening out of a Tarka Red, which
right,
is just
yeah.
goes wider than Nissa. You know, you have like Anafinza, like, four. There's 4/4s that is trying to fight with an 0/1, and it just doesn't line up very well.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The 0/1 tokens, like, that Nissa is such a weird card because it feels like there's definitely a deck that it slots into where it's great, but it just doesn't exist right now. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
The thing I wonder is if it's maybe in Modern, because every 3-drop Planeswalker has made an impression on Modern, whereas I just wonder if her engine is too slow right now. Maybe at rotation we'll get some different toolbox items and make her better, because I would have thought at 3 with her abilities, like, if we were going to see an impact, I would have thought we would have saw it by now, but it is only the second week. But I figure someone would have broke it open really quick. Like, someone
I
was waiting
think,
for this.
Yeah, I think it's getting played wrong. Like, I don't consider it a 3-drop, even though it is. Like, I think it's better in the same instance of Soren. You want creatures first to just put it in play, minus it, get the counters, and if it lives, it's upside from there.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And then the other thing that I feel like maybe some type of Aristocrats build or something that can benefit from sacking or doing something with those 0/1 tokens. Because an 0/1 token is a weird thing. Like, obviously, like, it's a chump blocker at best on its own, but there's got to be things that can benefit from generating one every turn for 3 mana. I mean, just 3 mana
well,
the
I mean,
first turn.
It's usually, like, you want the counters, too. So they become 1/2s pretty quick, and then... like I said, I think the value is in the counters and it should be treated as such. Like, I actually think it's like a five drop.
Yeah, I could see that. Play it late game, boost your team, swing in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, three mana for put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control, that's not a horrible card. Like, if it were a sorcery on its own.
Nah, we played that at 4 mana, and it was busted there. At 3 mana in the right situation, the card can be absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I definitely think that there's something there to it. It's just like, you know, like we've been saying, maybe it's just not the time for it. It doesn't really slot into any of these decks fine. Maybe we'll see something out of the new set that really makes it shine.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see, because most of the, I won't say that, a Tarkarad would love to get +1/+1 counters, but it's not going to play double green. No yeah. way. You have too many other cards that just get you dead a lot quicker.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just got more action at three.
Rally's not going to play it, even though that's probably your biggest chance to line, just fill the board with creatures.
But when they're filling it with creatures, it's kind of already done anyway.
Yeah, the dent, like, the, you're just winning more at that point.
Right.
And, so, and they do a lot of Coco stuff, which this is a miss for Coco, so you want less of those too.
I'm wondering, so we're seeing some other Coco, some other company decks starting to pop up. I'm wondering if maybe there's a slot for it in there.
Well, that's what Alex was saying, is it misses on collected company, so it's not good in that sense.
And yeah, no, but the some of these Coco decks that are running these value creatures, maybe there's a spot there, but like, I see what he's
point,
saying.
The three drop Nissa you can get off of Coco is better.
Yeah,
yeah. But then that's conditional, I think, too, because you want the three drop. You got the three drop Nissa, but then you want the land. You need the lands to flipper. So it's like, yeah, weird juggling.
It's gonna get better
right
with Sylvan Advocate, like using the Nissa to just ensure land drops, like. If you Coco for it, you have four lands. You get a Nissa, that puts you to five lands. So you're one away from making sure your Sylvan Advocate is online. Like, I think that's going to become
that's
a
good
thing.
Point.
Yeah, I think there's a spot for it. I just don't think it's right now.
Yeah.
I think it's...
No, the thing I actually want to see is a Naya company, because I like the interaction of Sylvan Advocate and Needle Spire, the red-white main lane, because you make it a 4-3 double striker.
Double striker, yeah, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to harp.
So, I understand why they went to Lumbering Falls, because it's hexproof, so your land doesn't get destroyed or whatever. But, like, as far as sheer power, like, I want to pump the double striker, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah. And not to harp on, like, Reflector Mage, but I want to see, you know, a Bant Company list happen where you just hit, you know, a bunch of value, say no creatures if it can exist at some point. That would be pretty sweet, too.
There's one on camera the first round this morning at XN1. He's playing Bant Company with, like, Reflector Mage and Bounty Crisis and crazy stuff. Ooh, like that.
Fantastic.
I want to see someone become immense. The Spire.
I mean, that'd be Naya. You can do it.
Yeah. Like, I win.
Yeah, and with, like, a Sylvan Advocate, just like, all right. It's like, you got to give it trample somehow. Well, I guess you're in red. Timur Battle Rage.
Maybe we'll come up with
Timur Battle Rage. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Deck builds itself. Oh, yep. Yeah.
I mean, actually, there's an embodiment of Fury, I think, is when you landfall, you turn land into a 3/3 and give all your lands trample. Like,
ooh, there you go.
You can just you do that.
This is starting to get too cute, I think. But yeah. I think that the initial pieces are definitely there for a deck. I mean, Double Strike has to be one of the scariest abilities of Magic for sure, because it doesn't take much pumping to just end it.
Double Strike plus Trample? Man, it don't get... Yeah. I only think the scariest thing above that is Death Touch and First Strike. Like, it does not get scarier than that.
Yeah.
What about this Prowess deck? The blue-red Prowess deck, though. Like, I saw it. It looked cool. I like the pieces of it. I haven't seen it on camera today. I'll say today,
I think,
or
the
yesterday.
Creature base for it is there. Like, they just have, you know, 16 solid creatures, all four ofs that are really good in that. I just think they don't have the spell base figured out to support it yet.
Yeah, because I was really excited about this deck, because, I mean, there's a little bit of counter magic, not enough to make, you know, me confused. All right, you have some good creatures. You got a couple hasties in there, and you have card draw. I was like, this seems like a very good tempo deck.
I mean, have we seen a list with a more streamlined spell base yet? Or are we still just... I mean, because the one from last weekend was the one that was all over the place. There's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
I caught a streamlined list where it was dedicated to more of a burn plan, where they were on four of Exquisite Firecraft and a couple Jeskai Charms. So, I mean, that is a reasonable plan. It's not my preferred route for a tempo deck, but it is a thing, and it isn't that bad.
Nice. I mean, it's...
Yeah, like, I would gladly play something like that with, like, a better spell base. Because, like, the one that Ross Merriam was running at the last one had, like, one Fiery Impulse or something, like, one Magmatic Insight. Like, it was just all over the place where, like I said, the creature base is good. You get Abbott, you have Swift Spear, you have Storm Chaser, and you have Jace. Like, that's solid.
Yeah, great.
And, like, you get Slip Through Space and things like that. Those are all great cards. There's just... It's because there's no Lightning Strike or Lightning Bolt. There's not a...
Yeah, and a Premier Red Burn spell.
Three damage card.
Yeah, definitely. It's weird that they've been holding back on that so much. I mean, we went from just a few sets ago where you used to have a burn deck to now it seems like burn spells are just...
I think Wizards is doing that on purpose because they don't want Prowess being that kind of powerful because creatures are seeing so much play in Modern as it is already. We don't want to push that too far.
They're doing it also too because they don't like the burn deck. Like the fact that there was a burn deck in Standard, they didn't like that because they don't like decks that interact on a different axis than you know, just creatures attacking and things like that. They try to limit those as much as possible.
And as true as that is, skip it. I loved it.
Yeah, it puts you in a weird place because as a player, like, you can only have so many mid-range decks. And there's always going to be one that shines the others out, so you have your clear mid-range deck, so where do you go from there? You need some aggro, some burn, some control, like, some variation in Standard, so it's kind of a shame. I mean, hopefully they'll back off of this soon.
Yeah, because that makes me wonder, like, if they didn't want the burn deck for that Standard, like, what about blue-white control then? It would have ran even more rampant for the time.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the biggest check. I'm going to do what I need, and if you stumble, I'm going to take advantage of it.
Yeah, you're done. But anyway.
Well, I mean, the blue-white could fight that. They had a Nyx Fleece Ram on the sideboard, which is always fun to slam on the burn player.
I mean, games 2 and 3, but it should be, to me, if you took that archetype, that burn archetype, for that Standard at the time, like, what reason would you have then not to play blue-white control?
Well, then, I mean, burn's just been so present in the game for so long. But we're getting way off topic here. Let's go back to current Standard.
I brought up the prowess list, and I mean, it almost looks like, and this is nothing against them, it just almost looks like we took a dartboard and just put some cards on it and was like, all right.
It's a week one.
Cool, we got this card.
Yeah, it was week one. They were trying to figure out what's actually good and what works in the deck the best, I think. So they just kind of threw some cards in there that, it's good in this situation. Is it, you know, a two of? I don't know. We'll figure it out as we play. Like,
Yeah,
I'm sure they came away from that. That's why I'm looking to see if we see a more streamlined list, because I'm sure they came away from this tournament with that deck going, okay, these are the adjustments we need to make. I mean, that deck almost looked like a learning experiment as much as a good deck to take to a tournament.
I mean, if there's something that good that did come out of it, it just goes to show that a competent pilot of any deck can run a tournament and do really well in it. And it just helps out when you are able to know your cards, know what you are doing, know your game plan to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, like I like the one that you mentioned, Jerry, that was more of a burn-centric with the Exquisite Firecrafts. I think that this deck, I'm not sure what direction the spells need to go, but I think if you go any direction and commit to it, it ends up being a better list for it.
Absolutely.
Just because it's more streamlined. Even if it's not the most efficient version of it, as long as it's more just a cleaner list.
Yeah, I
agree with that. And then we can also talk about, too, the winners of week one was a Tucker Red won the Open, which is not a surprise. People go aggro in the first week. It was a little surprising that he decided to go wide. He was running Reckless Bushwhacker and the Hoarding Outburst and things, trying to go wide like that. That was interesting.
Did you watch that? Did you watch that final match, Alex?
Yeah, against, like, the mono green Eldrazi.
Yeah, I was really surprised because I think with him being mono green Eldrazi, he is almost favored to just instantly win. And if you looked what he did in game two, well, I mean, game two didn't work for him. Game three, I think he just caught a break. Because I think if he would have sleeved up, kept the same 60 he had, we'd have had a short final. But he went,
he splashed black. He tried to sideboard into bigger, like, yeah, and just like Pia and Kieran and all that, like, that's not what you do there. You're the aggressor.
Especially when you're trying to take a mono green, like, you're going to try and go bigger against a mono green, like, big Eldrazi stompy things. Like, you're not getting that big. So just try and end the game by turn three, turn four. I mean, he got it in the third game, but I was really worried. Because did he have hand disruption also?
Who?
Kobe McDuffie, the red
part. All right, Corey. Yeah, okay. No, I don't think so. I don't know.
Because he splashed
black.
I was
just surprised that he went that route, because, like, the mono green, as opposed to, like, the green-red Eldrazi, doesn't have Kozilek's Return, which is one of the biggest reasons to play the ramp deck. Right. So, like, I think he should have stuck to the game plan to be aggressive there, but...
Yeah, I mean, he splashed black for something, and I thought it was some sort of hand disruption, but
it was Painful Truths.
Yeah,
he's running Painful Truths in the side to try to go longer.
Okay,
with decks.
Now it starts to make sense. Yeah, he's trying to go deeper into the game if he can't get there quickly, because he figured his opponent, hey, maybe this is what I'm thinking. He maybe thought his opponent had just missed red sources.
Nah, you got deckless though in top eight.
You get deckless in top eight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah,
he knows exactly what he's playing, and I mean, you should be able to go, all right, this guy doesn't really do anything until turn five, turn six, you know, maybe turn four if he ramps right. I mean, he won. I'm not taking that away.
Yeah, yeah, but it's still worth mentioning.
I just think it was one of those moments, if you guys would have seen me, you know, sideboard like that, you'd have been like...
yelling at you.
We'd be what are you talking? Are car? You trying to see how many turns
I've already
you can
yelled
take
at you
to
for
win?
Sketchy keeps. Like, yeah. I would have definitely been on you for this
like,
one.
I'm trying to find his angle here, and I got another concept to throw out to you. Maybe he was doing it because Pia and Kira have the option of going direct to the face beyond just being attackers.
Yeah, I could see that, getting around some ground
just
game.
Get around that Ulamog as soon as they play it, you know, get around it, try to end them as quickly as possible.
Yeah,
it could be a thing.
I just look at if game one, the guy literally just had lands on the battlefield with ramp, and you're scooping to start shuffling for game two, why you would move from that plan. Like, yeah. Oh, well, with these 60, he put lands on the battlefield and cast some ramping land spells. So game two, let's play the same game plan.
Yeah, yeah. Why change the course here?
Yeah, that was a good 2.5 minutes. Let's go to game two.
Like, just off the top of my head, this is my guess, because this is the type of mistake that I make all the time with aggro decks. I always want to go to the late game. I always want to grind out. And that's why I always try to avoid playing aggro decks. Is I make the lines of play, and I sideboard in a way where, like, okay, if he does this and this and this, then I can do this to extend the game, and that's not what you want to be doing at all. You want to be getting quicker.
But even in saying that... the fact that we had a mono or an Atarka red, and we started to see Eldrazi's real power in the first week.
Yeah,
I was really happy that we could see that. Hey, here are the new cards.
Yeah, it's a great showdown for the finals.
And I mean, he was 8-0 at the end of day one, 8-0, 9-0. He was undefeated.
Who,
at the end
Atarka
of day
player?
No, the only undefeated was actually a green red Eldrazi.
Oh, okay, so there's a different
at the end of day one.
Yeah, huh. There's only one undefeated is green-red Eldrazi.
But even the fact that they did that, I was happy. At least they printed cards that people were using.
Yeah, I mean, they've done that well the last few sets, because dragons came out and all the dragon lords saw some play at some time. A lot of them stuck around for quite a bit. And
I mean, Esper Dragons is still a deck.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, but you know, but when they were the namesake creatures, they came out, they impacted, they stuck around, and then now Eldrazi were the big creatures this time. They did the same thing. I mean... they're definitely doing good with making sure that the namesake cards, the point of the sets, are showing up in standard. So that's good, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, on a counterpoint of that, it's not Seadrino of Tarkir, so they missed that one a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. He showed her up too. I mean, he was hanging out. You can't really stop that.
Land is three friends.
Like, Butcher of the Horde should have been as powerful as it is, but it's not. So it just kind of makes you look and go, oh, Seadrino.
Butcher of the Horde was probably from the set, the one card I looked at, and I was like, that's going to be a roundhouse kick, and
not happening.
It
went away
up,
real quick.
Yeah, it showed up once or twice here and there, and... it was like, you know, a cheap state's number on
played in that Mardu deck.
It's one of those weird ones where, like, Yes, it has built-in power of giving you like lifelink and things like that, but it costs you board advantage. Like, you have to sacrifice a creature, so now your opponent has more creatures than you, and you get in these weird board states where it's disadvantage. So, like, that was its biggest drawback.
Yeah, I don't think we took advantage of it in the right shell.
I don't think it was good, to be completely honest. Like,
I don't think so either.
Sitting across from Butcher the Horde, I used to love when it would come down, because I would immediately just try to show, like, oh, no, he's going to haste it. He's going to beat my face in. He starts sacking stuff. And then you just kill it. Like, all right.
The one thing I enjoyed about it is on a board state where you have these little 1/1 tokens out that can't really go.
Opponent, it gives you an engine to kind of use them for something.
It gives you something to do and become more powerful. But usually when that's your out, you were probably
you're in a bad spot to begin with. Anyway, yeah. What were you going to say, Alex? This is enough on Butcher.
I was actually going to take it to the. Jim Davis got a deck tech with a Temur company list, which I thought was interesting because Temur has been typically like extremely weak in this standard. Like it's been it has really great creatures, but it's just been unplayable because they just don't line up well.
I like the deck tech though; it was really good. Good creatures.
Yeah, like the deck is cool because you get Knucklehead again, you know, and then you get the new Sylvan Advocate and you get Lumbering Falls. Kind of the same as, you know, Bant or Green Blue. But then he was also running Matter Shaper, which I thought was very interesting. That's the 3/2 Eldrazi for 3 that when it dies, you reveal the top. I mean, it costs less than 3, you put it into play, otherwise put it in your hand.
Ooh, yeah, nice.
So, like, you can Coco into that, and then everything in your deck is Coco-able, so everything is hit by Matter Shaper, so that was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, I think Matter Shaper was what was missing in that deck list. Like, it needed something to continue its value train, and in order for it to not just be another rally deck, and Matter Shaper is that card that does that very well.
Well, and if you're already built, like, Matter Shaper is the type of card that's not worth building around on its own, but if you're already building around Collected Company, it slots into that package real, real nice.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
It also has two of my favorite cards, because I just like this little interaction of
I'm excited for this.
Den Protector, Deathmist Raptor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's just, to me, that's just a solid little one-of package right there. Like, oh, I'll do this and this, because why not?
It's free. Throw them in there. The reasons. Bonus green cards.
I mean, now's a good time with Sea Dinos are back on the rise a little bit because they have the best cards to fight the Rally decks, because Rally's good, that makes Abzan good. Kind of the, you know, rock, paper, scissors. But now's a good time for Deathmist Raptor, because Deathmist Raptor puts a beating on the Abzan decks, because, you know, you just flip it up, I'll block your Rhino with Death Touch, and I'll get it back later to block the next one and things like that.
Yeah.
Another standard deck I kind of want to hit up on that it hasn't seen any real serious play, but the fact that it exists needs to be mentioned, is the mono colorless list that Patrick Chapin put up 2 weeks ago.
This is sweet.
Sweet list. It showcases the power of all the Eldrazi that have been printed. It isn't the go-to list yet. Maybe it needs a little more streamlining, figuring out what it needs to. But the fact that it's able to run nothing but lands in it that are not wastes, they are all just different colorless utility lands, is its real key point to the deck. It's where it just ends up being a machine on its own. And its board plan is fantastic, where it boards into mono-colorless ramp. With Shrine of the Forsaken Gods and Mage Ring, the Mage Ring land where you charge it up.
Yeah, Mage Ring Network. Yeah, I mean, anything where you can abuse all of these. I mean, we have tons of utility lands right now in Standard, so getting to play them for free, you know, you're not risking being off color at all, is pretty awesome. I mean, it's a sweet list, definitely. Have we seen it pop up really at Opens or anything yet, though?
A couple players have played it. No one's gotten deck tech. No one's really done well with it. It's a deck that requires work. Most of the cards of it are just better in Modern. But with the new set coming out, say, with Shadows, we don't know yet. These are cards to definitely look into. And the list isn't, you know, if you're looking for a budget list, it's almost budget. Nice. I mean, it's definitely cheaper than Jeskai Black.
Right, yeah, well, what isn't these days? But any last thoughts, though? We're coming up on time.
Yeah, there's another one I want to hit up real quick. It was, it won the, there's like a Moto League that people play to test new sets and stuff. Yeah. I forget what it's called, but it won that, and it was actually an Abzan combo using Eldrazi Displacer, which is a 3/3 for 3, 2 and a white. And then it has pay 2 colorless or 1 colorless and 2 generic, bounce target another creature and it come or you know it comes into play tapped, so it exiles and brings it in tapped. And then it runs Broodmonder, which is like a 6-drop that when it comes into play it makes 3 Eldrazi Scions, and then it runs the Cutthroat. So you sack the 3 Scions, gain and drain 3, use that mana to bounce the Broodmonder, it comes back and makes 3 Scions, and it's an infinite loop.
So IMO, I think that's too cute, and I'm a combo player here.
I think so too. But it is out there. It's another combo in Standard that should be mentioned, I guess.
No, that's pretty funny. I mean, it's funny that we're seeing more and more of those kind of sneak in, and it almost feels like Wizards was... Have they ever said that they're against combo in Standard? Because it feels like it.
Yeah, they've said it. They don't want Standard to ever be a real combo format. They're not for it. They've and clearly it, shown it in Modern.
And what cracks me up is Legacy. Like, it felt like for a long time there they were explicitly trying to keep combos out, and now they've sort of backed off a little bit because we've seen more and more sneak through between the last few Standards.
When Splinter Twin was legal in Standard, that was the biggest mistake they had done in a very long time, and they don't want that again.
Right, yeah.
They don't want another Exarch Twinblade in Standard format where the only deck that can even compete.
They just don't want like a 2-piece, easy-to-assemble combo. Like,
yeah.
We've had like Ascendancy combo and stuff like that too, but that was a mistake on printing Jeskai Ascendancy, but not any combo.
But that deck was hardly completely playable as far as a true combo in Standard. It just required way too many pieces,
and that's how they try to keep their combos.
Yeah, I just think we're seeing more and more of them sneak in now at this point, which is good. I mean, they don't need to completely not exist in Standard. Yeah, you can't have anything too overpowered, but letting one slip through every now and then.
Much as I love Storm, let's not see it in Standard, okay? I don't want to dream. You're never going to see Storm anywhere.
Cards do that.
All right, but we are at time here. Any final thoughts before we get out of this segment?
Oath of the Gatewatch is a really good set. That's my final thought here.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, it is a pretty good set for, like, it's good.
It's a good set. I love it. I'm a fan.
Cool. So thumbs up for Oath. All right. So we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to be talking about Power Creep. All right. Welcome back, everybody. So for this segment, we are going to be talking about Power Creep. Now, this is something that it's like a phrase that pops up in Magic pretty much every new set. People bring this up and we're always talking about it. And the idea behind Power Creep is just that as a game moves on through time, you want to increase the power of the cards, the power level. You want to do new and exciting things, but it pushes the game sometimes to unhealthy places. Power Creep isn't something that's inherently bad by itself. It just sort of depends on the situation. So mainly the focus that we're looking at today is compared to Modern and Legacy, mostly the amount of Standard cards that we are seeing come from Standard and go immediately into Modern. I mean, there's been quite a few recently that have been printed, and even before they're released, people are building deck lists in Modern with them. Do you guys have any thoughts on Power Creep? How do you feel about it lately?
The Power Creep as of recent, with the past few sets, has kind of just gone through the roof, man. Every set has always put in some card that just became an immediate Modern staple. We looked at the card and said, wow, this card goes into deck X. And that can be a good thing at times, but when it happens over and over and over again, it starts taking out the validity in decks that have been tried and true for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it really has the power to upset a meta. If a card, I mean, if you think about like just a card that gets printed that is powerful enough that it immediately warps a format, that's when you get into dangerous territory. I mean, if something slots into a deck, that's not bad on its own. But yeah, if it makes it to a point where the deck is strictly better than the other decks, now you have to start to have a problem. I mean,
and just to throw out a quick like real-world example of Power Creep that I'm sure everybody's familiar with is Whitney or Miltank. All right? First two gems, a breeze, you hit that Miltank and it just rolls out over you. Like, that's Power Creep, like, prime example.
All right, so no one knows what going into specific cards.
Oh, no, here, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about Pokemon Gold, Silver, and Crystal.
Okay,
all right. That Whitney Miltank.
Yeah, no, it's a real example that people will understand. Anyway, going into Modern, one of the bigger ones has been the upgrades to Burn.
Yeah.
Just between Atarka's Command and Monastery Swift Spear. I don't Abbott, if you want to run it, like, ugh.
Well, before we get too deep in that, I think the best example of power creep is Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time.
Wow.
I mean, those slotted straight into decks. Jeskai, Jeskai Delver, was that what was playing it?
It was Blue Red Delver. You didn't even have to play white anymore.
So Blue Red Delver, I mean, we saw that deck explode in popularity, start to run tournaments, and then we see Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time ultimately banned.
But it wasn't just Modern, that was Legacy.
Yeah. Right, yeah. We also saw Blue Red Storm and Modern just become a tier one deck in a matter of a printing of Treasure Cruise.
Yeah.
Some people in Burn were going from whatever colors they were putting playing in Burn and just went blue just because, I mean, if you're playing Burn and you get to reload the hand with three cards, like, you're probably not losing.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are cards that, what was the time frame? How long did it take for Treasure Cruise to get banned? It was, what, like 6 months?
Cruise was 6 months in Modern, Legacy, Vintage to be restricted, and Pauper. Dig Through Time was 6 months in Modern, and almost it took a year in Legacy.
Yeah, so, I mean, but these are cards that Wizards tested in Standard, they deemed okay, and even looking at Standard, like, they're fine in Standard.
Here's an important point to make noted real quickly before you continue on that.
Yeah.
When they print new sets, they don't really test for Eternal formats. They're testing for limited playability and some Constructed, but limited playability and rarity is all their primary objective in these sets.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a deep card pool that you can't expect them to do this. But so, yeah, I mean, that's good to keep in mind that they aren't necessarily testing for Modern or Legacy. But even without that said, just for a card to be printed, become a powerhouse, and then become banned all within 6 months is an insane trajectory. I mean, that's like, we don't see it that often that bad, but it's just a great example of what power creep can do to a format. I mean, it warped it around that Delver deck, warped it around that card, and then it was gone.
Like, I mean, flash in the pan. The last time it happened, Mental Misstep turned Legacy on its head, and Modern was just being created, and they put it right on the list, never got a chance to see play.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, so that's a good place. I mean, for people who are confused about power creep or what it could be or what the effects of it can be, that's a great example. But going back to what you guys mentioned, Burn, I mean, over the past like year, 2 years now, we've seen so many cards come straight from the printers right into that Modern Burn deck that it's changed significantly. I mean, Eidolon of the Great Revels is like, it destroys Storm. It warps the games around Burn. I mean, it changes a lot of things for the matchup both for and against Burn.
I mean, power creep of creatures these days seems to be they're taking overpowered spells from the early days and just jam them on a bear. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it, too, with like Burn, they've got something from like every set in the past 2 years. Like, they got Boros Charm out of Ravnica.
Which, that's like 3 years.
Eidolon
right?
out of Theros. Tarkus Command out of Khons. Like, the Skull list just goes on. Like,
Monastery Swift Spear.
Yeah. Abbot of Carol Keep.
Yeah.
The list goes on and on.
So, almost every set, at least every block, has contributed something to this Modern Burn deck. And I mean, if you look at some of the creatures that were being played before these creatures were printed, like, the power levels are just insanely different. I mean, Burn used to be a strictly tier 2, tier 3 even deck in Modern.
Yeah, it took a few creatures, because that's what the deck was always short on, was real creatures to put it over the top. And then when Lightning Bolt got printed in Magic 2010, that is what put it over the top in Modern.
Yeah, and then from there, it's just been foot on the gas pedal ever since. So, I mean, like, looking at these, but we've got a pretty, like, large list that we've come up here just thinking about cards that show up in Modern. And, I mean, it's gotten to a point to where if you're a Standard-only player who's getting into Modern, you're not going to feel quite as uncomfortable as you think, because you're going to see a lot of the cards that you're used to. I mean, Siege Rhino was another big one, and, I mean, that brings us into Birthing Pod, which had to be banned. And, I mean, the biggest issue that people are having with Birthing Pod is that as these more aggressive, more powerful creatures were being printed, the deck just got better and better each set.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it wasn't going to stop ever.
There was no reason not to play Birthing Pod. And as they continued to build better creatures or print better creatures, we'll say, like, it just didn't make sense.
Yeah, Birthing Pod was the be-all, end-all. I can toolbox for whatever I need, whenever I need it, however I need it, on a colorless level.
But just looking at a deck like Birthing Pod, where these are cards that it's got such a deep format to pull cards from, yet new cards are being printed and going in almost immediately. That shows you the power level of these new cards. And, I mean, on one hand, it makes sense. Like, Wizards needs to print new and exciting creatures, right? And, I mean, we've known for some time now that Wizards is a big fan of these creatures on the ground, mid-range kind of strategies. We talked about in the first segment how they're not crazy about the burn strategy, and lately they've seemed to be very against the control strategy. And for whatever reason, what they want to see in Magic and what they believe Magic to be is creatures on the battlefield tapping and swinging in for damage. So, like Jerry said, I mean, they're taking like powerful abilities from the past and just throwing them on a body. And, I mean, it's making for some seriously... I mean, the standard used to be a 1-1 for 1 was a good... It passed the vanilla test, a 2-2 for 2, 3-3 for 3, and so on. Whereas now, like, I don't think you can really use that anymore.
No, you can't, because that's out the window. The power level of spells to the power level of creatures has switched from the original iteration of the game. Spells used to be the thing what Magic was all about. And as years had gone on, pretty much since original Mirrodin in 2003... the role has switched to now this is a creature-based game where spells supplement the creatures.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it because, I mean, when you look back at that's another good flip side of it is when we're looking at creatures and the more powerful creatures have been printed, when you look at spells, it's a lot less common for a spell to get slotted into Modern immediately. There's almost always a better version that's already been printed that's already in the format. So... I mean, yeah, they're pushing creatures hard, but let's go down the list and talk about some of these. Let's see here. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about Burn. I don't think we mentioned this one specifically, but Atarkus Command was a huge one. I mean, between Zoo decks and Modern Burn decks, I mean, even the standard format, that card's made a huge impact. That card's very powerful. We haven't seen anything like that
probably. Not just the Atarkus Command, but the majority of the command cycle, the design of the cards of being able to activate two of any four abilities at any given time is powerful enough in and of itself to where they all kind of, you want to look at them and see if they're even possibly somewhat Modern playable.
Yeah.
Obviously,
on top of that, the fact that they were cheap this time around. Like before, it was like Cryptic Command is a four mana that it was just played because it was just that powerful because you get multiple effects. But like these are two mana and three mana. Like it's pretty insane for the rate.
Exactly. Even Ojutai's Command sees small play in Modern. Not huge play, but the effects are good enough and you get enough of them at instant speed that it worth a look.
Yeah, I mean,
Culligan's Command is another big one here that sees a lot of play.
Yeah, so looking at Atarkus and Culligan's and even Dromoka's is these three cards, like, one, any card that has modes that you can choose from instantly becomes better. I mean, because now it's not nearly as situational of a card. You can use it for this, and you can use it for this matchup or that matchup, and it's almost always a good card. You're very rarely going to see these cards sided out in Modern matchups. I mean, they're just good answers to a lot of things. I mean, Atarkus Command, you can prevent life gain, you can deal damage to your creatures, damage to the face. I mean, I think we've even seen every now and then a Blue Moon, someone will actually use the additional land or play a land mode off of the card too. So, especially with these landfall decks and everything. So, I mean, it's just a powerhouse. And like Alex said, I mean, the converted mana cost is the biggest thing because you look at Salomgard's Command, that one was, what, 5 CMC?
Yep.
Yeah.
And we don't see it. It doesn't see play.
It doesn't see much play, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really like, it's not only are these abilities good in having the modes, but the aggressive casting costs printed on these things are insane.
It's unreal. It's like we were playing, you know, charms. The idea behind the commands when they were originally printed was these were supposed to be two charms on one card for twice the cost.
Right.
Now we're getting two charms on one card for the same cost as a charm. That's insane.
Yeah.
That is power creep at its real prime example. That's
the definition right there, yeah.
Well, then going into like cheap stuff, we can talk about Delve, because that just made a huge impact too with like, we already talked about Treasure Cruise and Dictatron, but we didn't talk about Murderous Cut, Tassiger, you know, Gurmag Angler, Becomements. Like, all these cards have become Modern staples as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... Well, because really, I mean, Modern, when you look at the Delve mechanic, in Standard, it's fairly tame. You don't... I mean, now we do have fetch lands, but just the amount of low CMC and free, like, cards like Ataxian Probe, you know, essentially free casting cost, all these cheap cards that are seeing played CMC-wise in Modern are fueling Delve at an insane rate. And then you see decks running like Thought Scour now to fuel Delve just shows how powerful Delve is. And I mean, yeah, so I mean, when you look at like Thought Scour, that card essentially says pay one blue, add two mana to your mana pool and draw a card. And it's two mana you can use whenever on a Delve card. You know what I mean?
Well, it's three mana because you count the card itself.
True. Yeah. So there you go. Even
sure.
Better.
Black Lotus for blue.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you look at the power level with that, all you really need is a decent Delve card to see play. And, I mean, you see, like you said, Murderous Cut usually ends up only costing a black. Tasker, you usually cast, and Gurmog Angler for a single black. I mean, that's insane. And these are some seriously big bodies in Modern, and they've warped the format to where you used to be able to bolt most creatures, Anger the Gods, things like that would answer most creatures on the ground, whereas now you have to see more like, what's the Phyrexian man? Dismember started to see more play to answer these.
Rending Volley.
Yeah, Rending Volley, Roast, things like that. I mean, you just had to upgrade your answers. I mean, even playing Scapeshift, I had to start running like repeals and things to bounce these big creatures because I couldn't answer them otherwise. So, I mean,
I'm actually going to... I'm also glad they banned Writhing Pod before Tasker and Angler were in the format.
Yes.
Because, like, supercharging Pod like that would be insane.
I mean, because, yeah, that would be a card that they could Pod into, or they could just reasonably cast for the one black and use Delve. I mean, yeah, that's insane.
I mean, I could just imagine, hey, look, here's my Gurmog Angler, and now I'm going to turn it into Gristlebrand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, so that's, it makes perfect sense why they burned Birthing Pod. I mean, that deck was going to get completely insane. But yeah, so I mean, like, the Delve mechanic in Modern is just so easy to abuse, and I think my favorite thing about it was you started to see cards, like, older Delve cards pop up too, like Logic Knot and things like that, where people are like, hey, you know, Delve's pretty good in Modern.
Yeah, Delve, I mean, Logic Knot and Tombstalker, the original Delve cards that were printed in Future Sight, were already semi-playable, like, specifically, you know, Logic Knot in blue-white-red control. That was a real popular spell there, where it really did play as the closest thing to counterspell without having to be too constrained to your deck.
Right.
And the power level was already seen, and then they just came out with all these Delve cards, and it just spewed its way into Modern and Legacy.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of these cards, their initial CMC, like, if you take Delve off the table, Tasker, his CMC is what, 5 is his real CMC?
6. He's black and 5.
I don't think I've ever cast one for 6, but... He's not a horrible card at 6, right?
No, I think he's fair at 6.
Like, it's fine. He's probably wouldn't see too much play without Delve at all, but he's a fairly reasonable card. You take 1 or 2 off the mana cost, he's a pretty good card.
Yeah, 4 mana, he's a 4/5, and I'd pay 4 mana for a 4/5 with upside.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a fair trade, whereas usually you're paying even less for that form. So I think that's the dangerous thing they did with Delve this time is they basically took cards and printed them at a slightly, maybe 1 or 2 more mana than what you would expect to pay for that effect. Whereas Delve is realistically usually taking 3, 4, 5 off the cost. I mean, that's insane.
The simplest explanation for Delve is Delve rewards you for playing Magic.
Yes.
As silly as it sounds, it truly does.
Which, yeah, in Modern, like we've already said, like, I mean, you can enable those cards so fast, even without Thought Scour, even without trying.
You don't have to. You're just playing the deck, and these cards are good in it.
And going along with Delph here is Jace, Vryn's Prodigy, which is good in Standard, but it's even better in Modern because he just flips so fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a weird interaction because, I mean, luckily he does die to Bolt, so you've got that, but... Once he flips into a Planeswalker, a lot of decks have a harder time dealing with a Planeswalker in Modern. They're not really built for that. And I mean, yeah, we've seen like these Grixis Controls decks kind of build around Jace, and they've warped that deck to where it's playing more like less counter magic and more kill spells and things like that. Things that they can flash back reasonably with Jace. And I mean, yeah, that's a powerful, powerful card.
And he just works well with Kolaghan's Command.
Yep, Blue Jund.
Well, in that deck too, just being able to get it back. And like Snapcaster and Kolaghan's Command are like best friends and like...
Yeah, seriously. But I mean, like, even looking at this list, though, and going down it some more, there are a lot of cards on here that I don't even think I quite realized how many things are being ported to Modern immediately until we really started to look at it, because you just get so comfortable with it and you start seeing these things. I mean, going down here, we've got Monastery Switch Sphere, which we mentioned, but that was another, like, immediate auto-include into Mono or into Burn. And even some of the, like, red-green creature-based decks, the Zoo decks, are running it as well. Prowess is an insane ability.
Like, the majority of these cards on this list are so obvious, with, like, the exception of Pia and Kirin Nalar. Some of these were just so, like, wow, really? We're printing this now, and we're going to just jam this in our decks and go with it?
Yeah,
Pia and Kirin is in that nice spot where it's played for certain reasons, and that's Affinity, because it makes 2 artifact blockers that can block its champion and things like that. And then also going wide is good too against like Liliana and things like that. So like it was just value based and hit that sweet spot that
absolutely
decks needed.
They hit that, you know, being that 4 mana card that can lock up a game is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some matches where Pia and Kirin come down and they just stop the battlefield, or they put you on the attack real well. I mean, nah, it's a solid card, but I mean, that's one, yeah, that, like you said, we see 1 or 2 copies of in some Modern decks. It wasn't this obvious auto-include, but it's about the only one on the list like that. I mean, Abbot of Carol Keep, like, That's a very powerful card. Are we seeing it in burn a lot, or is it just kind of peeking its head in? Or?
Abbott's not really a burn card so much. It's more of a, it's sees more play in the Delver lists because of the value it obtains.
Makes sense, yeah.
But it can see, it does see periodic play in it, but it's done better in the decks that actually want the effect.
Yeah, so I mean, going down here too, like Become Immense is one of the other Delve spells we mentioned, but that made Infect, what, infinitely better? I mean, that card's insane in Infect. I've had quite a few games where I've been able to peck one or two damage at them. They go on the offensive. They start killing my creatures. It looks real bad for me. Okay, I draw Become Immense. Okay, I draw a creature. I'm able to play it. And then all of a sudden the game turns into, can you kill this like now? Because otherwise I'm killing you next turn. Just like that.
Effectively, Become Immense and Infect was one green mana plus 12 plus 12. That's broken. That is outright broken.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's an insanely powerful card, and yeah, I mean, it turned that deck, it made it quite better. I mean, now I'm up to running three copies in the list, and you know, obviously you can't cast three most games, but you just want to hit it. It's such a good closer. And I mean, even in non-infect list, that's a great pump spell. I mean, arguably one of the best we've seen in a long time, considering it's usually, you know, shaving off quite a few of the cost.
Especially if they're still running the Temur Battle Rage to go with it in the side, like one green and Temur Battle Rage. I'm pushing through and hitting you for at least 14 usually.
Yeah, and then I mean going down the what's up, Alex?
I was going to talk about that. Actually, it's one of the next ones on the list here. It's probably the biggest sleeper on this list because it's one of those, like, you think about it because it's in Standard right now and it's not played. But then it just immediately ported to Modern and Legacy, and that's Harbinger of the Tides.
Yeah, that's like, the new Merfolk, right?
Just immediately.
Yeah, because it replaced Tidebinder Mage, right?
Yeah, Harbinger of Tides really does make a very much more mainboardable version of Submerge without being constrained on colors than Submerge was, because it's just not a mainboardable card. And Harbinger puts that 2-2 body for 2 that can be sometimes 4 when it needs to be.
And it just bounces any creature, right, when it comes down?
Tapped.
A tap creature,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can vial it. Right. Like, it's supposed to cost 2 more for flash, but you just vial it in a response to attack and bounce that creature.
Exactly. Yeah. You get to do that. You get the upside of vial cheating it in. Same was with Silver Gill Adept.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, Harbinger, I mean, replaced Tidebinder pretty much immediately. It slots into, is it 2-2, right? Is the body on it?
Yeah, 2-2 for 2.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, it's a powerful, aggressively costed merfolk with a ability attached to it that's very relevant. I mean, especially in the matchups that it has problems with, where they have creatures on the ground clogging things up.
Like, when Harbinger of Tides was printed, it gave Fish the ability to fight Twin when Twin was legal. Like, it gave it the possibility of winning the game. You know, they tap, activate the Twin. Oh, in response, I'm going to vial in this Harbinger, bounce your dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the type of card that Merfolk wants. It's an ability that's not insanely overpowered, but there's a lot of times where it's going to be very clutch and it's going to come in handy, and it's really not costing them anything because it's two for two anyway. But yeah, I mean, Harbinger, like you said, not really seeing play in Standard just because there's not a Merfolk deck. No deck really wants that effect right now in Standard, but yeah, very powerful in the right shell. What about Goblin Bushwhacker? I see that on the list. I'm not familiar
with
that one.
That's a typo on the list. It's not supposed to be Goblin Bushwhacker. It's supposed to be Reckless Bushwhacker.
Okay. You're right. I typed it wrong.
Okay, gotcha.
That's the
gotcha.
Old version.
Yeah, I was super confused by that one.
I mean, it's basically, Reckless Bushwhacker is the better version of Goblin Bushwhacker. You can, with the surge cost attached to it, it can now be cast off of your Burning Tree Emissary. Instead of having to be red-red, now it's red colorless. So now it just makes even more busted turn twos in your red-green hyper-aggro list.
And just Zoo in general. Better on it, too. Because, like, it's even good on turn three when you just cast, like, a Curd Ape or a Nacatl and then surge it and give your Nacatl a Curd Ape haste. Like, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
Or using Vexing Devil, because now no matter what mode they choose off the Vexing Devil for the Punisher card, it doesn't matter. You're either going to swing with it for 5 that turn, or it's going to deal 4 to their face because they decided to sacrifice it. And it still kicks off your surge cost.
Yeah, that's completely insane. I mean, like, so we've covered most of the cards on this list, but...
You're skipping the last one here that I actually want to talk about because it goes into Legacy.
All right.
And that's Warping Whale, the new colorless 2-drop that goes into Mud. And the reason was Mud's bad matchups were, like, Storm and Death and Taxes. Well, Warping Whale, just Mom can't beat that card. Because it can't give pro colorless. And everything in Death and Taxes is a 1-1.
I actually played Storm against it, and I didn't count on having Warping Whale, and they went and played Whale counter my Infernal Tutor, and I just looked at myself and went, wow.
Like, Mud couldn't beat that. Was, like, unwinnable for Mud, and now they get a counter for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very powerful card. Slits right into that deck just fine. I mean, really, and we can talk about, there's some more on here, too, that we haven't talked about for the Eldrazi creatures and stuff, but mostly I just kind of wanted to back up for a minute and just, like, what do you guys feel? I mean, it seems inevitable, though, right? I mean, power creep. We've talked about these cards, but how do you feel about the effect that they've had? I mean, do you think it's detrimental to the game? Do you think it's positive?
It isn't detrimental when they do it the way they have done it to some extent, where, you know, power creep rises, and then, you know, like, for example, the first Zendikar set in this block right now, the power creep was lower. None of the cards really saw too much extended play anywhere until the new set came out. So as long as they go in sort of a wavular motion where they're not rocking every, you know, every set that comes out rocks every format ever made, it makes it a little bit better. Wizards has been really good at doing that in comparison to other card games.
Yeah, I mean, other card games have completely blown it. I mean, they have older cards that you're never going to touch ever again. But, I mean, yeah, I think that Wizards has shown decent restraint. I mean, they could have completely just made all the older cards completely irrelevant by printing much, much more powerful cards. And they've paced it pretty well. I mean, when you look at how many sets of Magic there are and how many come out a year, they've done a pretty considerably good job looking at, like, Legacy and Modern, where there's some older cards that still see plenty of play. So
and
I do.
And also, they're going to the two-block cycle now, so there's going to be less sets. Like, there's also going to be less impact moving forward as well.
Yeah, definitely. That definitely was a good, like, measure for them to take, to where we're not seeing tons of new cards coming in and shaking everything up. I mean, because Modern, like, it's a tough line to walk. And I know that they say publicly that they don't consider Modern when they playtest these sets, but Modern has become so huge that I can't entirely believe that anymore.
I mean, the same rate, though, they'll play, you know, Jeskai Ascendancy was printed. Like, how could you not see that? How could you not see what Jeskai Ascendancy does to Modern?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean,
or
what
just
has
any format. That card's insane.
But it's done, but it stayed pretty tame there relatively. I don't think it's really had a huge effect on the format.
When Treasure Cruise was legal, Jeskai Ascendancy Storm was the Storm deck.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that paired with Treasure Cruise was a huge mistake. But I think Treasure Cruise was one of those issues. I mean, even if you go back and look at forums when the card was first spoiled, the community was not reacting the way that they react now. You know what I mean? There was a lot of, this seems okay, or it might see play. People were not immediately on the, this is going to get banned, this is such a huge mistake. So I give Wizards some credit there. It's not often that they print something where the community sees it and immediately goes, this was a huge mistake. Now, yeah, there's some powerful cards where we immediately put it into a deck, but that's not necessarily the same thing at all. So yeah, I mean, looking at like Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, I think that caught most people by storm. Or by surprise, by storm. This is a slip of the tongue there. But yeah, I mean, I think that overall they've done a good job, but I think that it's become a little more concerning over the past few sets. We're seeing more and more of these cards. They're having bigger and bigger effects. And it still hasn't crossed that threshold, I don't think, where it's getting dangerous. But I think the trajectory is pointing us to where we are going to hit that in the next few sets.
And well, I mean, we have to look at a little bit of an upside here, too, because, like, especially with, like, Modern, like, it's based around certain synergies from other sets. So, like, it's a little bit good to have some synergies from recent Standard sets make their way into Modern. Because if you look at, like, Mirrodin is still played in Affinity, and that was one of the, you know, first sets in Modern. And then you get fairies out of Lorwyn and blue-black fairies and things like that. So it is nice to see archetypes kind of carry over a little bit.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think I started to say it and then I got sidetracked, but I think that's the sweet spot where they have to hit, where the new sets come out and they do have an effect on Modern and they do get ported over, but they're not warping the format and pushing older stuff out. And I mean, we see with the bannings of Twin and the Bloom bannings and everything, they don't want decks that are going to push things out. They want it to be, you know, this big open field of all these decks you can play. Whether or not they've achieved that is yet to be seen. We'll find out. But I do think that, yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, you want Modern to get shooken up a little. You want to add new decks and new synergies that people can enjoy. But you also don't want to completely push out things that people love about the format at the same time. And that's hard. I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy task at all, but it's definitely something worth keeping an eye on. And I really hope that they change their position on how they test new sets, because now with less cards coming into the format each year, it seems more and more reasonable to start testing these for Modern at least a little bit, because this is a huge product for Wizards at this point. And like, I understand, like, you want the new cards to be powerful in Modern, so that way it stirs up sales of the new set, gets the new product out there and see in play, and I'm fine with that. It's just to what degree, you know what I mean? I don't think we're at a bad spot yet.
Yeah, I think they could take, like, you know, 10 minutes in testing, you know, a quick Google search and be like, let's make sure this card's not going to combo with anything. Like, as long as it's not like a 2-card combo or even like a 3-card easily accessible combo, I'm fine with them printing cards that go directly into Modern.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and even beyond combos, even just like a, is this going to push any particular deck over that limit to where we just see players switching to this deck in masses? You know what I mean? Like, is this like, if you printed a burn spell that was 1 red, deal 5 damage at instant speed, obviously that's too powerful, you know what I mean? So that would be a red flag. But just things like that, just to kind of poke it into decks. And I mean, they haven't really, I think Treasure Cruise was the only time they've overstepped it so far in recent years, and they banned it. I mean, they corrected it, so they're definitely keeping some eye on it, and that's good. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I think a little bit though, they have to tiptoe around certain things. Like, I don't think we're going to go to Phyrexia anytime soon, because Infect is already so good. Like, I don't think we need more Infect cards. Like,
yes, that would be very
hard. The same with
Affinity.
Yeah. We're not going to go back to Mirrodin anytime soon for that reason. Like, Affinity would just get that much better, potentially.
Yeah, no, I mean, those would be two sets where, like, I mean, we would see some very, very bad Phyrexian mana cards being printed if that were the case.
Can we go back to Lorwyn?
I'm fine with going back to Lorwyn.
I want to bring some tribal back.
I mean,
back.
In all honesty, though, I want new sets. Like,
Yeah. No, I agree.
I want Kaladesh or like an actual Dominaria set, you know, besides like core sets and stuff. Like, give me those new things.
Despite this 50-50 thing where they keep saying, okay, we go to a new place and we come back to an old place, I just want to go to nothing but new places now. Let's try to, you know, these decks are already powerful enough. Let's add more to the format by just creating new cards altogether from new places.
I want to go to a new plane that I actually like. Since I've been playing, all of the new planes we've gone to, I hate. Yeah. I hate Atheris. I hate the cons of whatever. I don't care about the dragons. Let's go to, like, I have no good example.
Elfland. We're going to Elfland.
You want to go to Vryn.
Yeah. You want to go to Vryn. I could just see it on your face.
Yeah, but
Vryn.
Even Jay, like, that's not like his world of super control power, is it? I mean,
yeah,
he's just from there.
Yeah, it's
Yeah, but it's a world of, like, telepaths. Like, there's other telepaths and stuff. Okay. So it could be controlling.
There you go. I can dig it. Yeah, whatever plane they have 4-mana wraths on, that's where I want to go. We have abandoned that plane altogether, and I miss it dearly.
Well, that plane got destroyed by all the 4-mana wraths.
That's true, yeah. A very volatile place. Didn't last very long.
Just Bobby and all the blue mages walking around holding their head. I can read your thoughts. We're going to do nothing. Your turn.
Done. Pass. Play land. Go. Land. Go. Land. Go. That's a set of just lands. That's your only option. All right. So we are coming up to time. I mean, this has been a long cast today. We've added some bonus flavor for you for apologizing for last week. But do you guys have any last thoughts on Power Creeps? Any final thoughts before we get out of this thing?
Once again, I think it can be fine as long as it's managed. As long as we don't go back to Innistrad and we get like a reprint of like Lily of the Veil and Snapcaster again and like crazy stuff, like, I think Power Creep is fine as long as it's managed, controlled, and contained.
I'm going on the record right now to say that I do think the shadow over Innistrad is Emrakul. Boom.
No,
laying it down right now, just in case I need it documented before this set.
And he's
going
to punch Liliana and the Snapcaster Mage.
Out of there.
Out of it.
My final thoughts on Power Creep is, you know, Power Creep is like alcohol. If you do it in moderation, it's all right. It's all right.
Very appropriate for our 21st episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, in closing, I definitely agree. I don't want to sound like I think that this has been a bad thing overall. It's something that Wizards has done a very good job of keeping an eye on and maintaining. Again, this game is 21 years old? 95?
Forever.
It's a very old game.
1994, almost 22.
Yeah. So the fact that they've been able to manage it so well over these years, and I mean, obviously there's been some hiccups and they've had to readjust quite a few times, but the game's in a very healthy spot right now. And yeah, like Alex has said, I'm not... Cards going straight into Modern is not an issue at all. It's cards going straight into Modern completely warping it, which we haven't seen other than Treasure Cruise. So hats off to them. Good job. They're doing good. But all right, guys, that'll do it for us for this week. We don't have Rob with us, so the announcements are going to be kind of rough. Do we still, Alex, are you still recording videos for the site?
I've been slacking off lately, but I'm going to do more here when I get a chance.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. So we'll get some fresh content up there, some videos, maybe some new articles. Again, sorry for last week. I mean, that was just another of our long list of technical mishaps, but it looks like we're all set and good to go now, going strong again. So we'll be back next week with a fresh new episode. But all right, that'll do it for us. Adios.
I guess that's better than Latios.